If your companies are like against alts, if your company's against crypto, if your company's against AI,
social media,
if your company's against you advertising, you need to get out of there. Because
before it's too late.
Because they're going to push you to a dangerous place.
Sure.
Because what happens with technology, well, we've seen it a lot the last few years, is if you don't adapt, the world moves so much faster than it used to. It used to be like, if you didn't adapt in 10 years from now, you might be out of business. Now you don't adapt, in 18 months from now, you're out of business.
Sure.
It just happens so much darn faster. And those are a couple of the key things that are like, you need to be watching out for these things. Because if they're not allowing you to do that, if you're not allowed to advertise on Deep Slurp, we have the opportunity to advertise for free on platforms that have hundreds of millions of people on them at no cost to you. It's just effort and energy, yeah. Right? Social media.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to do that? What are you talking about? Like, what do you mean I'm not allowed to do that? Now, you might do it and suck at it, and you will suck at it for a while, and you will get better, okay? Like, I know from personal experience, I feel like a podcast is getting better. Like, I understand sucking at it. I get it.
Yeah.
In trying to get better at it, you might not be very good at it, but at least you can do it. At least you have the opportunity to get better. If the answer is no, you're never even going to have the opportunity to get better. You're just going to get gone. All right. Welcome to the Advisors Collective podcast. My name is Joshua Malk. I'm excited about this episode because we're actually going to be talking really about the brand I'm connected to most. On this show, we tend to stay away from that. We talk very much industry and stuff that's going on in the industry, things that can help you as an advisor in your business. But there's been a lot of requests, a lot of DMs and people just reaching out, you know, what exactly do you do? You know, who's the brand that you're with all about? And which then leads to, well, kind of the brand I started. And, you know, so figured it was time to make a conversation about what that is, what it means, and guess who and what I'm connected to. So I'm here today with our chief of a lot of stuff. I don't know what the actual title is, but
tech marketing,
tech,
etc.
Copywriter, master, ChatGPT specialist, and all others. So, Annette McEwen.
Glad to be here.
Your third episode?
Yeah, I'm almost a regular.
We did episode one, which was over a year ago, which is funny because we didn't actually launch it. We recorded the episode and then we sat on that episode for like five or six months.
We were a little busy.
So we thought we were gonna launch it, and some other growth metrics needed to take place first or be done first.
Yeah.
And then episode three. You're on episode three right here in the studio. So
yep.
So this should be a lot of fun. We're talking Terra Wealth.
That's right.
Talking the actual brand today and why and who we are and why not. So hope to do it justice the best I can solo.
Yeah.
We're very segmented in like the brand and who we are as like the partners, founders, and who does what. And there's a huge swath of the business that I don't really pay much attention to.
It's kind of nice. We need that.
We very much have a roles, what we do, and we stay out of each other's way, you know, and we just have trust in the other person to do that, you know, those other realms. So depending on what you ask me today, I'll be a little more brief on certain things, and others, if it's more my alley, I'll probably be a little more exhaustive in the answer. So
yeah. So first, like, what do you do? That'd be good for people to know. Who are you at Terra?
Yeah, I mean, by title, president, but of course, titles don't really mean anything when you're in a growing company, right? Because it just means jack of all trades and master entrepreneur, I think, means this crap runs uphill, right? And I say that Elon Musk recently said that, gosh, let me get this quote correct. He said something about owning a business or being an entrepreneur is like eating glass every day and staring into the abyss.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
And, you know, as an entrepreneur as well. But I think that's really like my lead role is that because somebody's got to see into the future That's looking into the abyss. See into the future, believe and have belief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that we're going to make it there. Like that's going to happen.
We can offer a solution to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just chewing glass through it because somebody's got to like, somebody ultimately has to make the hardest decisions.
Deal with challenges and problems.
Challenges. And that's what a lot of times the leadership really does, or the founding of a company that most people don't know is they're the ones who, just the hardest decisions come to. And that many times means that people just don't like you.
Yeah.
It means that people do like you sometimes and don't. Depends on which way a solution leans, mm-hmm. you know, in a situation. But I mean, at this point, mainly chief like vision, I would call it. Like, I really think a lot about like, what is it? What does it need to look like? What did we originally say it would be? Never forgetting what that was, you know, and excellently getting off path. So,
yep.
And then really worried about the culture. I'm always really worried about. And I say worry, like I don't worry about them.
You're not a big worrier.
I'm not a big worrier, but I do worry about culture.
Mm, it's important.
I really want people to, I want our ethos to be this particular, this goodness, you know,
which is
like your life matters. If you have kids, like that matters, you know, everything matters as well as work in making all of that fit. So your life doesn't suck in one area, not the other, you know, but also excellence inside of the business realm, you know, and that people are really working to achieve that, and have some kind of balance, and we don't have assholes in our companies.
I like that policy. Like that,
our very clear no asshole policy.
Really?
It's been doing this business too long. I just, episode of Material Bell was Jan 12 of, it's now February, whatever, it's the end of the month nearly.
Yeah.
But when I was doing that episode, it was a good day. It was my 19th year since I'd passed up my first exam.
Oh my.
It's a life insurance exam. And it was just reflecting, you've been doing some 19 years. It was just before my 40th birthday, which was just, you know, like a week ago. So 39, started when I was 20, 19 years. It was just, it's not worth working with people that suck. It's just not. Like if somebody's, you know what I mean? Too much drama. You're just get out of here. Like it's people over profits is the best way to say it. You know, so that's the culture part that I really worry about. And I do have to say, like, I'm really proud. We don't really have any assholes.
No, I love like, to. None. Like it's great.
We've got people that we rub each other, but it's more like family, you know. You know, brothers, sisters, kind of
iron sharpening iron, more of a thing.
Yeah.
Drama.
Yeah. But we always like get through it and work through it, which I think is cool. So anyways.
Yeah, good. Well, we'll get into more of that as well. But I wanted to kick this off by asking the most obvious question, which is starting a full hybrid financial company is like a lot of work. And I know from knowing you so well that you already had a really successful career, as did the other founders of Terra Wealth. So why? Like, why didn't you just keep riding that wave? I'm sure you would have only continued to find excellence and success. Like, why put a halt to that and go in this totally different direction? Entrepreneur launching a brand new company, chewing glass, you know, what?
I mean, I don't know if we're just undiagnosed in some capacities.
I don't know, that's true. At least ADHD.
There's definitely some of that going around. you know, I don't know if that's contagious or something where it's like that. No, so I would say when you see something that just has to be done, what you've done so far, like the success you've already had, the whatever, it just doesn't matter anymore, because how fulfilling is life going to be when you get to the end of your career life and you just go, yeah, I found a place. I did okay. I stayed there. Always had this dream to do something really special. And then I just stayed where I was at because it was comfortable.
Sure.
The main reason, I think, when you just talk to the handful of founders, really, of the company, if you really get down to it, I think it was more about that than anything.
That makes sense.
You can do well. You can make money. Sure. You can make money a lot of ways. But are you doing anything that's actually impactful? People are going to remember.
Legacy.
You really made a damn difference in the world in some capacity. And just saw an industry that was just we think is pretty jacked up. And there's other companies doing things very similar to us. Mm-hmm. That's where I think the culture part comes in. Mm-hmm. We're potentially very different, as well as some of the material things. Mm-hmm. But even that, if there's three companies doing what you're doing in a landscape that's, you know, three quarters of people are in a warehouse, just, mm-hmm. you know, living life like a damn robot inside some machine. Like, I don't know. That's why I wanted to do this. There's too many great advisors out there not living a life fulfilled, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They're trapped in some kind of matrix that they don't know what life could be like on the outside.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what were the initial conversations like with you and the other founders? Like, what was standing out to you? What were you kind of like, oh my gosh, you feel that way too?
I mean, a lot was pushing around. Everybody was swinging RIA only. There's just so much in the industry.
The other founders or just?
No, just like the industry. It's really moving that way. And one of our big philosophies from day one was being full hybrid.
Okay.
We're like, no, that just doesn't. None of us agreed that in every situation, somebody being in a managed account for all of their money was the best play.
Yeah.
It's like, I just don't know and how often that's fully accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in the solution. Does that have some connection to an insurance-backed program?
Mm-hmm.
You know, something life insurance, broker-dealer potentially. Like, mm-hmm. there's lots of solutions for reasons.
Sure.
You know, and there's, somebody had once said, there's no such thing as bad products, just bad advice.
Okay.
Like, you're just giving products to the wrong people.
Sure. Yeah, or maybe you don't have access to what they need.
Yeah. So part of the real ethos from the beginning was full hybrid.
And everybody was on board with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one thing we were like 100% fully united on.
Were you all coming from platforms that didn't offer that?
It kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Some of the founders were more like corporate type people. And then some of us were acting as financial advisors.
But everybody's been a financial advisor, yes? All the founders.
Everybody's carried a briefcase at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and sold across a kitchen table or sold at.
Been through it.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows the real game.
So can you take us back to the early days of Terra? What was the vision that brought you all together? I've sort of asked that already, but like, so full hybrid, what else? What were you like, I'm not seeing this anywhere else?
Technology. This is huge. I mean, it's really bad when the companies are touting like their technologies. We have Firelight, and you're like, okay, this is.
I don't know. So I'm. Yeah. What is Firelight?
It's just like an application for filling out apps instead of paper. You know, okay. Doing it digitally. It's like, that's not technology.
Mm.
You know, that's filling out an application via a PDF, glorified PDF system instead of doing it on paper. That's not tech.
Sure.
Tech is. Integrated CRMs to social media.
Okay.
You know, tech is lead generation that actually works for you. You know, I don't know, just there's just so much more beyond.
So beyond full hybrid, you wanted to build a company that was like built for the common era.
Built for the actual common era. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And not piecemeal, because you can take like this old thing and try to just keep putting new on it.
Okay.
But just because you take the panels off of the old car and put new panels on doesn't mean that like the frame and the geometry of the steering and all that. It's still an old car.
Sure.
You know? So a lot of old brands are trying to like retrofit to make stuff happen and it doesn't really work. And that was part of what we looked at.
Sure.
We went to a lot of the major houses, looked at super OSG models and all kinds of stuff instead of trying to do it all of ourselves, because honestly, it would have been easier if we should have found a solution.
I imagine, yeah.
And just built a big team at that solution.
Mm-hmm.
But it just always felt like it was going to be a retrofit.
Yeah.
And that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we keep saying like 21st century. People always say 21st century, but it hit me the other day that like, we're, you know, it's 2025, you know, we're 25 years into the new millennia. And looking back, you know, that's like in the year 2000, if my dad was talking about the year 1975.
Yeah.
It's like classic rock at the peak, you know, just killing it. Me talking about the year 2000 is like that now. This isn't new. We've been in this thing for 25 years, right? And into the new century, you know, and where I say that is like, companies are still operating on stuff from the 80s, really. And in many cases, and it's just, I don't think you were able to fix it. You just had to get away from it and start something new.
Sure.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So you left these careers, put all this work in, all this cost to building these systems, your new company. Was there a moment early on where you saw or experienced something and you're like, yes, we are on the right path?
It's probably, I mean, there's a bunch of those situations that I had these little flickers, you know, where you just go, oh, that's cool. That's actually working. But a couple that come to mind, first few times that because we were using social media and actually allowing reps to use social media, when other companies is like, we'll create a post and then you can use our post. But so is John, Jack, Jill, Jessica, everybody in the whole damn company is using the same post. You look really unique.
Social media loves that when you just repurpose content. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exact same, like, no.
You just use it. Yeah. Why is it not getting any traffic? Because it's the company's stuff that everybody else is using. And it's
probably feels pretty corporate, really smaller.
So it was a couple of the first few key things to happen is when individuals were making their own content that's getting compliance approved. Okay. And then writing and saying, I'm getting DMs for appointments from my own posts online. That was like one of those. One of our guys, I'll never forget this. One of our guys in the first year and a half, I'd have to look back exactly, but it was like his first year here, closed a client bigger, singular client that he closed was bigger than any singular client at his previous firm. And his previous firm was a multi-billion dollar AUM company.
Dang.
Lots of little clients. But this guy comes over and closes one client is bigger than any client in the history of that other firm. So like that was cool. It's like, we're a brand new company. We're already attracting clients like this, which tells you like the platform's solid. So there's been lots of little things, but it's those just wins for the reps that to me are the biggest tells for us.
Yeah, that has to feel good.
Sponsors are kicking butt. I'm like, that's what makes me happy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more like getting started question, then we'll get a little bit more into TerraWealth's platform. I'm curious if there was a personal experience or challenge in your own career as an advisor that made you realize like things need to change and they need to change now. And if I don't do something about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's twofold. There was the social media element, just being, you know, I think it was 36 or 37 when we started Terra. 37, wanting to do social media and just not being able to as an elder millennial.
So you couldn't even have any sort
of... Like zero. Yeah, I mean, you can't talk... You really can't... In most firms, you can't talk about the fact that you're really a financial advisor online.
And is that based on some regulation or is that like a fear thing?
It's more of corporate things than it is the actual regs. I mean, you're allowed to say that there's something that says in the SEC marketing rule that you can't say that you're who you are and what you do.
Okay.
It's just rules around promises and guarantees and, you know, things of that nature. But if you're not saying anything promissory, you're just explaining who you are, that you are in fact in business. But most companies will allow you to do that outside of literally putting out on LinkedIn their one LinkedIn post that's, but you getting creative on Instagram or wherever your followers are or the people you connect with in community, you're not allowed to do that. So, I mean, I would get these long letters of like essentially cease and desist on things that I was doing before I was going to get basically, you know, shit canned for doing it. So there was that element. And the other side is product. There's a lot of places, I mean, captive, non-captive, I mean, outside of if you're completely on your own RIA and you're fully independent, you're on some platform that pretty much has limitations that are much more narrow than most time experientially people know. They know how narrow the focus is of the products. So, you know, you learn what a structured note is and you realize you can't do it.
Yeah.
You learn what a, you know. You figure out a fee-based variable annuity. Oh, we don't have those on our platform. You know, whatever. Just name the situation. There's a bunch of them. and you're looking for products and solutions that are best for the client,
mm-hmm.
you as a fiduciary are trying to do the best thing for the client first and foremost.
Yeah.
Because that's literally what the law says. And you're also just ethically like, I want to do the best thing. And then you find out there's things out there that you could provide as solutions that's just not at your firm.
Mm.
That was one of the big things. It's like, sure. Why don't we just have somewhere that it's like all there? It's just like, it's pretty much all there.
So I sell coffee, as you know. I'm trying to imagine myself not being able to say I own a coffee roastery on my like Facebook profile. And I can only offer like general, like grade, like not even good coffee. Like I know there's a specialty grade coffee I can buy direct from all these farmers who I know personally have been to some of their farms.
Yeah.
But it would be like me, A, not being able to say I am. I own a coffee roastery.
Yeah.
And then B, when I do talk to people about it, I can't tell them about some of the best coffee there is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds frustrating.
It would make it really tough to sell a lot of coffee.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, the clients that I did have would be like, this coffee is okay, but, you know.
Yeah.
Is this all you got?
Which is why we see advisors leaving other platforms that are coming to Terra. They're bringing all of their AUM.
Sure.
You know, whatever they're not bringing is the stuff they want to leave behind. You know, handful of clients are just a nightmare or whatever. You know, they're like,
that doesn't happen.
That's never happened. Yeah. Advisors love all their clients.
That's right.
So no, but they're, I mean, because the clients want that too.
Mm-hmm.
Clients are like, if I have the option of 10 solutions or 2 solutions through you, I want you to be able to look at all 10 and find the best thing for me, not just only look at 2.
Sure.
So that's pretty huge.
That's huge.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to get a little bit more detailed into the platform. We know Terra is full hybrid, but I've also heard that you're building an advanced markets team to support high net worth families. So I'm curious, what challenges are you seeing advisors face in serving these clients? And how will this new team and this process help them overcome those challenges?
Yeah. I mean, let's think of it like this. Advanced markets is just what it sounds like. It's advanced. It's more difficult.
It's Halloween. Okay.
Right. The average financial advisor lands in a couple of different brackets, almost like boxes of where they typically work.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost always move up the scale. You know, you're new. I'd say young in that new in the industry might be 40 when you start, but typically there you're the lowest net worth you'll ever work with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of the clients.
Sure.
And then the progressively moves up. So you start to move from people that have like, you know, 100 grand, people that have $500,000 to $1 million or whatever. But when you're at $1 million and you get your first client who has $2 to $3 million, you go, well, I want all my clients to have this much. Because I'm managing triple the assets for a very similar amount of total work. If I have, you know, 6 clients with $500,000, or if one client with $3 million,
sure,
the billing's the same essentially, and I'm able to devote that much more attention to that one person, you know, that one family,
let's say,
versus trying to spread that out across 6. But as you progressively move up that scale, it becomes harder to know A, how to prospect those kind of people.
Sure.
Like, where do you find them, right? So how do you prospect those kind of people? B, do you have the brand and everything behind you that's also creating enough credibility that they want to be with you?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of high net worth people don't go to independent shops because independents are kind of scary because it's like,
who are you?
Who are you? You're just this little mom and pop in town. So being connected to more of a national brand really matters from that perspective. And then third is like the actual resources. You start to move up and you realize, well, I need a really great estate planning attorney. I need a CPA who doesn't just work with W-2s, but really understands all the aspects that a business owner is going through.
Yep.
Now and in the future, it can forecast. And then I need financial planning software that's probably over my head of traditional and what I'm working inside of to also work with those kind of clients. So we wanted to build, and we're currently building out a few different levels of that,
mm-hmm.
so that advisors can work from the $100 million net worth plus type client down.
Yeah.
And we have a specialized team then internally then who helps with the planning, all the way down to the marketing and how to actually prospect and meet those kind of people where they are, and then take them through the process that's like so professional that it just shows up whoever they're with right now.
Mm-hmm.
If they're with anybody and the plan makes sense, then the process and the feels also good. So they want to, they want to change because of that, you know, people don't just buy cars because it's mechanically good. Like somebody didn't say, well, I'm buying a Mercedes because they're really reliable. But if that were the case, you just go buy a Toyota. You buy a Mercedes because it's reliable. And like there's these additions, you know, oh, it's aesthetically more pleasing than a Toyota. The materials inside are nicer. The customer service when I take my car in is a lot better.
Yep.
Like how that feels is better. You know, there's so much more connected to it. And when you're working in a high net worth space, all of those little nuances matter more. And a lot of times advisors get stuck on, they still think it's about like the car. Mm-hmm. It's about the portfolio management. No, it's not.
Sure.
It's about that plus.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put in all these other elements that really make people feel special?
Makes it feel high end.
Makes it feel high end.
Yeah.
The difference between the Bentley dealer and the Toyota dealer, how do you build that into your practice to bring those kind of clients in?
Yeah. So you really see this as a way to serve clients better, but also help advisors grow the practice, earn more, make better use of their time.
Yep.
That's good. Like to talk a little bit about compliance. We already tapped into that a little bit, but it's often seen as a roadblock for advisors. What were you hearing from advisors? You've already spoken to this a little bit, but anything else that you experienced yourself that made you say, time for a change?
I mean, I'll just give an example. We our merger and acquisitions team, I'm on a lot of those calls and work in that space a lot. As Terra really is a platform, but we're also an aggregator. We built the platform to be an aggregator of advisors to come to,
mm-hmm.
you know, with their clients and bring them somewhere better.
You should.
And one of the biggest things I hear in those types of calls is the compliance element. I have an email that, you know, if I request something, I just get back a no from email address, do not reply at compliance at XYZ company. You know, there's not a phone number. There's not an answer like, why is it uncompliant?
What can I change?
What can I change?
Yeah.
It's like, what do I got to do to make it compliant? The answer is no. I hear that all the time, weekly, from reps all across the country that we're meeting. That is a regular thing. And I just can't imagine dealing with that kind of roadblock. I mean, that is just tremendous to think, trying to send out a piece of email marketing campaign or literature or I want to email a bunch of people on LinkedIn and I can't get it through compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a tweak it and add this disclosure. It's a no.
Full stop.
Don't do that. How are you supposed to grow? It just doesn't make sense.
Sure.
Probably the biggest compliance thing I hear is it's like compliance overreach. And I think the problem comes from these compliance officers have never been in the field.
Sure.
They took up FINRA, you know, whatever. They become compliance officers.
Yeah, Mr. Better Safe Than Sorry.
Yeah, so they just don't know how to read where the lines are.
Yeah.
They don't understand where the line on the grass is at.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just think, well, just stay right in the middle of the field all the time. And you're like, well, not everything. You don't play the game of football in the middle of the field all the time.
Yeah, it's probably not best for you and it's not best for your clients.
Well, the reason the lines are the lines for out of bounds is that's the out of bounds line.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of bounds. Everything inside is in bounds. The middle isn't in bounds. That's the middle. And compliance is just like, well, that's where you should be. And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. What's the point of the lines? Why would the SEC create a line? Why would FINRA make it clear on something? That's not the why. So we see that a lot. I mean, I digress. That part gets me like super infuriated.
Feel it.
Because it's just like, how are advisors supposed to do well? This is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Well, you haven't stopped there. So in addition to having a flexible yet compliant compliance team, you've built advanced software and tech integrations. So what does connecting like CRM systems like Arkeam and Redtail do for advisors? Why is that so important?
One, compliance.
Oh,
Because we're
back there already.
Yeah. If we create things for them in a way that they can make it custom and feel like them, but because we're creating the template, if you will, the back end, it's adding in disclosures properly and these things to make it that much more simple for them to be compliant. And then that creates these processes, as you know, that an advisor can create something in the technology, it pushes over to compliance, compliance can read it, approve it, or tell them they need to make an adjustment. But the real reason for the CRMs is, I think most CRMs in our industry, just to name the, you know, like you named Redtail, you can go with, you know, there's multiple versions of Salesforce that different brands build out.
Yeah.
You know, these white labeled versions of Salesforce, if you will. Wealthbox, so many others. They are document vaults.
Fancy.
With workflows and things, but really they're for clients. Financial advisors, I think, have like totally forgotten what business they're in half the time. I mean, I talk to advisors all the time, and I'm like, what do you do? And they talk like they're portfolio managers.
Sure.
Like, you're not a portfolio manager. You want to be a portfolio manager, see if you can go make the cut somewhere. Okay. You're not a portfolio manager. You're an asset aggregator. That's your job, is to go find money. Client assets. Like,
so if all your tools do is store documents for clients, you're probably not finding money.
That doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's back end. That's a lagging indicator. A client is a lagging indicator. You know, it's already a customer. So we just thought it was really important, as you know, social media, the other CAM, or what we call client acquisition and management.
Keyword.
Is that it's for client acquisition. How do you prospect in this day and age? How do you, in a world that's just full of like text messages and emails, and you've got to talk to 10 times more people than people used to have to talk to just 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You don't talk to 10 times more people to get half the results because people are bombarded.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing was, well, how do we make it easier for you to not talk to 10 people, but just talk to 1,000? And how do you talk to 1,000 with almost no effort so that you're just that much more easily finding the clients that are a good fit for you and your shop and how you do things?
Makes sense.
Yeah. So
it's good. Have you seen good results, like advisors building better relationships with their clients, having more awareness, like
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what firms give every advisor a custom cell phone number that operates through their phone? So they have their iPhone, you know, your number at AT&T.
Uh-huh.
And then on there's also an app, separate app for call, text, note taking, appointment setting, email sending, right? And email and SMS messages and phone call in outbounds are all archived.
Gives compliance the warm fuzzies, right?
Oh, compliance is like, Jack, you're not using your personal cell phone.
Sure.
When communicating with clients, it's like, who's doing that kind of stuff? So that was one of the big things I wanted client communication to be brilliant. And everywhere, it's just a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
It's, well, my secretary, and then they patch the phone to me, and I'm like, we're using landlines. Like, this, you know, I don't even want to be in my office. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's different for everybody. But the point is that you got to be able to be on the move nowadays. Everything's on the move, and your business needs to be able to move with you.
Okay.
It doesn't need to stay back at the office. You should be able to take your office to the country club.
Sure.
You know, in the offices wherever you are, including South Florida during the winter and back in Iowa in the summer, you know, wherever your own base is, right?
Yeah.
I think your office should be able to move with you in a digital world. And Tierra's platform allows you to do that. Most companies just doesn't let you really do that properly.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, last question about the platform here is we also provide unlimited video hosting, also through CAM. A G Suite Enterprise, and we have custom compensation dashboards. The cost of all this is—it's not insignificant. You clearly believed that it was important, or you wouldn't be putting the resources there.
Yeah.
Why? What kind of advantage does this give advisors at Terra Wealth?
First off, we do all of that. Like, most advisors, they have no clue how much, like, unlimited data storage for media costs.
It's crazy.
Like, that's psychotic, how much that normally costs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can be in the 50s, hundreds of dollars a month per rep really quickly if they're saving data of any magnitude whatsoever. The crazy part is we were able to build a business model that was smart enough that at the compensation levels that we have, that we don't have affiliation costs. So advisors don't pay BIPs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay a certain BIP. They don't pay a certain fixed dollar amount. At our wealth managers don't pay anything. It's just built into the comp grid.
Okay.
To have that offset. Because most people know their grid's a lie. It's a lie from the devil. You say, like, I'm on a 92% contract. Who do you think you're kidding? Do you think everybody's stupid? Like, these guys aren't at 92. Nobody's at 95. When you start to back out what they really pay to be an advisor,
mm-hmm.
almost nobody, net,
mm-hmm.
all up, is anywhere north of 85. You're 70 to 85%, depending upon what your overhead costs look like inside that office and everything that goes with it, right?
Sure.
And by the time you pay for compliance and that's if you're fully independent. And then if you're in a wirehouse or somewhere, you're at 40, right? And you're getting everything paid for you.
40?
Yeah. And you're an employee, but so, I mean, it's great. You walk away on Friday, somebody pays all your bills for you. There's that. What we wanted was something in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, what if you could make that 70 to 80 net,
mm-hmm.
no fees, you just know what you get is what you get. But then on top of that, there's ownership and we have dividends, equity, income, all this other stuff. So we wanted to build something that was just different. It was like, it was just so much more clean and straightforward.
Yeah, and right for the era that we're living in.
Yeah, right.
Well, I want to get into dividends and equity and all that a little bit down the line here, but... a little bit on marketing first. So you've built and are continuing to build an internal marketing team, which I get to be part of, which is great. It's kind of a unique choice. What gap were you trying to fill for advisors?
I mean, advisors, they're again, what I said earlier, they're really in marketing. Rolex is not a watch manufacturer. They might make watches.
Okay.
But Rolex is a marketing company.
Interesting. Okay.
Louis Vuitton doesn't make purses.
Mm.
Louis Vuitton's a marketing company.
Yes.
Because why would you pay that much for a leather bag?
Is it?
If you didn't feel like it made you, if it didn't feel like, you see.
So you're saying there's true value in the brand and marketing itself.
A ton. Yes. There's so much there. I mean, there's lots of, you know. Can you buy people? I can buy a Timex. It keeps time as well as that Rolex. Yes, you are right. But guess what? Nobody wants to buy a Timex.
Sure.
Everybody wants to wear a Rolex.
But it keeps on ticking.
Yeah, right.
Same. Is that enough?
It's just about the time. It's like, well, I won't get into the client side. But the point is that advisors need help with that. Because
mm-hmm.
advisors, many times, we're technical thinkers.
What you're saying is you're nerds.
I'm trying not to say that, but you know, yes, we're like the Timex works.
Yeah.
Yes, it works, but nobody wants to buy it because it's not sexy.
Because mm-hmm.
it just works.
Mm-hmm.
Clients want to be somewhere that they go, you know where I'm at? You know, they want that. They want to feel like their advisor is cool. They want to feel like the brand they're connected to is Louis Vuitton or whatever. They want to feel some gravitas to it and stuff. And
yeah.
And they, it's hard to do that when you yourself are a Timex thinker.
Sure.
You see what I'm saying?
They're not looking for a Timex.
Right. But the client's not looking for a Timex. If they were, they could just go online and just buy a Vanguard S&P 500 index fund, sit back and not pay you any fees and just go on forever. But we know that's not how things really work.
Sure.
It's not how things really work. Right. The clients sell and they need help. And that's why they need an advisor, because somebody needs to manage their psychotic behavior during volatile times. And
yeah, right?
This is where we come in. This is where our value really comes in. And that So we know that. But the part we don't know is that the reason that the, a lot of times a company lands at your firm is because they're comfortable with your firm, not just you.
Mm.
They need to buy multiple elements. There's layers.
True.
You know, they have to buy you. They have to buy your proposal and your recommendations, but they also have to buy your firm.
Mm-hmm.
And when if they look up the firm and there's a bunch of bad reviews and about a bunch of bad publicity, or even worse, there's nothing.
Sure. This person doesn't exist.
I mean, if they find
a your landscape.
By the way, if they find your website, you don't exist.
Mm.
Because that's your website.
Sure.
Con artists all have their own website. You see what I'm saying? Why? Because you made it.
Yeah.
But what is social proof is, I think, the terminology.
Sure.
Like, what is the world saying about you outside of what you're saying about you?
Mm-hmm.
We felt it was really important that, like, all that stuff needed to align.
Okay.
You know, so, like, clients love, you know, like, last year we were in, like, Newsweek's top, you know, financial services companies for 2025. You know, CityWire put us in, like, their fastest growing RIAs in the country. You know, I mean, by the end of this year, we'll probably be half a dozen other major publications. Clients need that.
Sure.
They need to feel that. And you can't do that as an independent.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're at some big old house that's already going on for you, so you're like, well, I have that where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all good. But what you don't have because of that is you don't have opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the backside.
Sure.
So it's the opposite. You work at Ford versus you're coming up inside of Tesla. There's a lot of money in Tesla when you bought the stock and you're one of the first employees.
Yeah.
There's not really money to be made at GMC. There's just in the stock, that is. You know, you can just work at the plant and make an income. So sure, there's firms that you can go to that are established, but there's no opportunity. It's just income. It's no equity.
Sure.
You can go the other way. And that's where you can get into both sides. That was one of the fun things we wanted to do, but you need a brand for that.
Cool.
Yeah.
I would love to hear like a story or example of how having good, you know, social proof online, having a strong brand, marketing assets helped an advisor.
I mean, just in this building right here in Crown Point, Indiana, we had, I don't even know, we opened our Google My Business for reviews. And we have 20x more reviews than any other financial advisor in the entire county. So guess what happened to the Google SEO?
Yeah.
People start searching a financial advisor because our compliance allows it.
Mm-hmm.
We have the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what we're doing. So we know how to make sure that like clients do it rather than just, because we don't care. It doesn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
We've had millions of dollars of AUM come in off the street. Just calls in, books, they don't even call in. They just book an appointment and literally show up.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
And that's just one. I mean, that's just one, like, and we've heard those stories like that from all over the country.
Sure.
And our reps who were at, I wasn't allowed to do this. Now I am. And I'm literally seeing flow from that. And that's things like Google My Business for, you know, reviews. Has things like personalized websites that are custom to you, not just some generic one with a little face in the corner changes and it's corporate nature.
I know a little bit about this.
Yeah.
Because I help with the CRM and all of those integrations. And I hope people don't miss the fact that you just said, I did nothing to get this client in the door besides set up these systems really and use what the platform offers. So you create your Google My Business, which is not always super easy, if I'm being honest. Like, it feels like it should be a lot easier than it is. You really have to prove that you're a legitimate business and kind of jump through some hoops. But once you do, all good, that's set up. And then we integrate that with our custom CRM.
Yep.
So you've got a button on your Google My Business. They can check you out and click and book an appointment. All the reminders are sent out automatically for you and the client. It's pretty cool.
Shouldn't your financial advisor be like your dentist?
What do you mean?
Like, I just got a text the other day from my dentist. Like, I have an appointment coming up.
Yes.
I was like, you have an appointment in a week on this day and time. The day before, they'll send me a text. The day of, they'll send me a text.
Yeah.
Because we're running, your kids got soccer.
You're busy.
Your life's nuts, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, shouldn't your financial advisor be like that? But why is the advisor doing it?
Sure, because that's where you need to be.
You know, Brian's looking at his calendar, and he's like, hold on, I got to text this guy, and, you know, don't forget my point. Or, you know, or he's telling his secretary, who he's paying
a
bunch of money to, right? He or she could be doing better things than texting or reminding clients of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a personal touch. It's the personal touch. That's not personal touch.
Mm-hmm.
Personal touch is you being able to spend more concerted time with them when they're actually in the office and you're more focused because you're not doing all this other bullshit. That's real touch, you know. So anyways, I think we should pour a drink because
sounds good to me.
We have we have the assets.
We do.
So I've got a decanter. I'm gonna drink whiskey. I think you're gonna drink gin.
Yeah.
Which is pretty typical of us to pick our sides there. I made a little bit of a mess, but
this is my favorite. Thank you again for introducing me. Blue Coat.
It's good stuff.
Well balanced, citrusy.
All American Philadelphia.
America.
That's American First Gin, which is awesome. So to episode, like, if it went episode 13, I should have looked at the count before the show started. I've lost track, but it's fun doing another one here with you and digging into the brand that we're building. So
good stuff.
Cheers to another episode. Cheers to you guys if you've been watching this for a while.
That's right. Maybe you should take a break and have a coffee or a fine whiskey or gin.
We're not going to stop you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Is it land?
Yeah, it's nice.
Good.
Yeah.
Back to business.
Back to business.
So what I really want to know about, and I'm sure other advisors do too, is compensation and growth incentives. Royalties.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to introduce a royalty compensation model to Terra? What kind of impact has that had for advisors?
Yeah, so I'll define that.
Please.
I call it a royalty, but look, most people in the industry, I get on those merger calls for people that are looking to come to Terra and they're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of funny. So
it sounds good.
I call it a royalty because when you write a song, right? You're a songwriter.
All the songs I've written.
I've written songs. If you write a song, you put that out there.
Yeah.
Every time somebody listens to it, right? Downloads it, streams it, whatever, you get a half a penny or something, right? Tons, bazillions of times that it's listed or, you know, or played, right? You get a royalty check.
Okay.
Royalties is, you know, you're getting paid. Brad Pitt's still getting paid for, you know, Fight Club.
As he should.
You know, or whatever. Kurt Cobain's daughter is an insanely wealthy young lady.
Sure.
Her dad's been dead for 30 years, right? So that's royalty. We believed that financial advisory practices are built by financial advisors, right? The home office, the back office, we're like the bones that hold it up, but like the advisors are the muscle.
Sure.
They're the ones that really make it happen. So we're like, well, why do companies get all the credit for the recruiting? This is stupid. So as an advisor, it was really important to me that we built into our compensation model, and not just myself, but the other founders felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So we just saw that the recruiters out there were getting, let's call it 5% one time on somebody's revenue.
Okay.
When they're recruiting them. It's kind of simple math is.
Sure.
You got a $1 million producer, 5%, 50 grand. They get paid 50 grand to recruit that person. So you got these headhunters out there who are looking for people like, hey, you think about changing bros?
So that's all they do for these companies.
That's all they do.
Yeah.
And then they don't work for these companies. These are independent people.
Okay.
They hunt, they build up a Rolodex, if you will, for the older people.
So they don't work in the company. They have a general idea of the company, but they don't.
There's firms that just do this. They're pretty big firms.
Okay.
And they're headhunters.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just like sports recruiters or something.
Sure.
And they go find advisors who are seeking maybe a new home.
Mm-hmm.
Then they find companies like us that are aggregators who are looking for people who are looking for a new home.
Mm-hmm.
And when they bring in somebody, that person likes us, it works out. take a minority stake. Maybe they just join the front, very clear, whatever the situation might be.
Sure.
They get a cut on that person as a recruiting fee.
Okay.
So he gets $50,000 and $1 million producer, let's say. Okay. We believed that that should just go into perpetuity, like build that into the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Build that into the compensation model. So we actually have this percentage that's paid out into perpetuity as a monthly check off when checks are issued for the month to advisors for their actual commissions and fees.
Mm-hmm.
A perpetuity check is sent out to if somebody recruited them. So we got a guy who came from Ed Jones. He got a friend after he left. Somebody called him. He's like, hey, Melody, you can't believe he left. What? That guy comes under his credibility of the first guy. We're going to pay him forever.
As long as he's with Tara.
As long as that other guy's, as long as both of them are with Tara, he's going to get that into perpetuity.
How often does that pay out?
Every paycheck. Whenever we pay comp.
Every paycheck.
It pays out. So it's not like an end of the year bonus. Let's say it added up to 50 grand for the year.
Yeah.
Somebody's situation, but it was just spread out. And we do it next year, next year, next year. So if the person you bought triples in size over the next couple of years,
mm-hmm.
the amount of money you received from them into perpetuity is now tripled. It keeps going up. It's a percent of their total volume.
I mean, so what do you have to do to get it?
You just got to, all you got to do is introduce somebody to us. We do the recruiting. Our merger and acquisition team does the recruiting. But you just say, hey, I got my friend Mike. He's over at XYZ. He's really unhappy. I've kind of talked to him a little bit about what I'm doing, but I'm introducing them to you. Okay. Like in this, we always add this now lately in the show notes below. There's a page. There's a merger and acquisition page. People click on that. They book an appointment. That's going to book an appointment with either Dwayne Morrow or myself. And you're going to sit down and chat with us, get a chance for us to feel out if it's maybe a good fit or not. And it starts there. And then it moves down the road. And that might be just somebody who joins free and clear. You might take a minority stake. In some cases, it's a full asset purchase. And we're actually helping people to fully secede from the business. A couple of people have actually just straight up retired.
Yeah.
And we brought, you know, they have a junior that took over the book. And now that book is on our platform, but the original advisor is fully retired. So.
Well.
Yeah.
What could this do for someone's practice? Like if, let's say, you know, Bob, he's at Terrawell. He really enjoys it. He was at a previous wirehouse firm, whatever. He has a lot of relationships. What if he brings on like 10 guys? I mean.
Yeah. We'll just do the math. So that percentage can kind of vary based on size of the person.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say, for generic on the podcast, it's $30,000 a year per guy. 10 guys is $300,000 net. That's income.
And they're not doing anything.
Doing nothing for us. It's not like a leadership development thing. We're paying you to help us just grow our sales force.
Wow.
We need more distribution. We got to pay somebody.
Mm-hmm.
We either got to go pay headhunters, right? Who half the time are giving you people that aren't really a good fit. They're fluffing the numbers. There are all kinds of stuff because they're getting a one-time switch incentive. The incentive is literally to lie, cheat, and steal, right?
It doesn't sound good.
It's not good because you say, what could they do? They could pump the numbers up, big whatever, because you're getting it one time.
Sure.
But if you're just going to give it a perpetuity, if you're lying about how much the guy's going to know how much comes over.
Sure.
Right? So you're going to get paid on what that person does.
Mm-hmm.
We need to grow the fund. That drives up total valuation in the front. You want to drive your income up because you're not dumb.
Yeah.
So.
But it's really smart because, I mean, who can speak better to the firm than the people who are on the platform?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people like way overcomplicate that concept, even inside of the firm.
Well, it just sounds kind of too good to be true. So that's why I keep asking him, like, so what's the catch, I guess? Mm-hmm. But I see what you're saying is it's something that normally costs a firm a lot of money to hire these people who may not have a complete understanding or be incentivized to be totally honest.
if I got to pay 50 grand up front for somebody that I don't even know is going to be a fit for us in 6 months, right? I mean, just maybe they don't culturally fit at all. Then we paid for them.
Yeah.
And they're not even a good fit for the brand.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like us. We don't like them. Whatever. It's still the worst case scenario, okay?
Yeah.
We had to pay for it. If you just bring a friend in, you're getting paid if they stay.
Cool.
If they're only here for a little while, we only had to pay you a little bit. Maybe they'll look on 0.5%. So they're paid for months and they left. That's worst case scenario for us.
Mm-hmm.
Best case scenario for you, worst for us, is they stay for a long time and they grow.
Mm-hmm.
But our belief was that partially, like say we wanted to give the firm away. We wanted to give the highest level of compensation humanly possible while also building the company that had this tremendous equity value to it.
Sure.
And there was kind of a game there in the numbers and how you do that, but we wanted to maximize compensation while retaining the most total corporate value.
Well, man, I love that. It's so awesome. I want to talk a little bit about the RIA platform. So I'm curious why you chose to offer both Orion Advisor Tech and Orion Portfolio Solutions TAMP. How does this flexibility impact the way advisors serve their clients? How does it help them with their practice?
I mean, we want to be multi-custodial, which we're plumbed with Fidelity and Schwab.
Mm-hmm. Heard of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you guys.
We'll go down that road. So because as an aggregator, you gotta make it easier for people to get here.
Okay.
Right. So a couple of the biggest custodians, it makes it easier when we're bringing people on to come over. Same goes for CRMs, you know, we're integrating and building in multiple CRMs connected to our other CRM.
Yes.
So that as people come over from other shops, the transition is easier from.
Yeah, it sounds really stressful, honestly.
It's terrible. Like repapering your book is like right up there with like, I don't know, getting a colonoscopy or something probably. I don't know from experience, but it can't be good. It's like that. It's not fun.
Yeah.
The more custodians that we have on the platform, the less people have to do as far as like a full or repapering call. Okay. So anyways, we wanted a platform that fit for both types of advisors. So some advisors are going to have a tremendous amount more alternatives in their book, or they want to do a lot of alternatives and where they're at doesn't allow it. When we have a really robust alternatives selection, if you will.
Yeah.
And policy on there as well as crypto. So we, OAT... If people go look at Orion Advisor Tech, we used Orion because they're kind of the Apple right now of that space.
I love Apple.
They're very technology driven. It's a very young company.
Sure.
And what I mean young by the staff, like you meet the staff, they're young. You know, they're just on it. It's of course complicated, just like anything else. The older you are, the more frustrating those things are initially.
Sure.
But they are the best in the game right now, I think. And so we wanted to be on both sides of the house. We wanted TAMP, you know, model delivery. That's more your space size, depending on what your book looks like. We have that TAMP opportunity, just makes life really simple. Or in the OAT, you want to do more of your own trading.
Mm-hmm.
You've got more high net worth clients. You've got a larger book. That's probably going to make more sense. Well, we have our own back office people internally to help with that sort of thing for those advisors. So we wanted to build something unique. Most places don't have essentially like two sides.
I'm really seeing the value in, we always say, a company built by advisors for advisors. Because you wouldn't have the insight to make these decisions if you hadn't kind of been in the trenches, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So in addition to this, you're building custom portfolios managed by some of the largest names in the portfolio industry, including, you mentioned this a little bit, but alternative investment options like crypto, scary. What's driving the demand for these solutions among advisors, and how are you handling it?
I mean, alts are really important just because without getting into the before the episode. Stocks and bonds are correlated now.
Sure.
So you used to have this big non-correlation between stocks and bonds. They're very correlated, at least right now.
Okay.
And alts are a way to find investments in your portfolio to diversify that aren't correlated investments.
Okay.
So
usually I'm like following you.
Talking to the IT person right now.
Usually I'm like kind of tracking, but that was totally
She's in marketing and IT. Okay. So
I
so
like computers.
I'm trying to keep this simple. Alts in our whole space of advisory practices are really blowing up.
Okay.
So you need the opportunity to have those. And we have portfolio managers that have them in your mix on, let's say, the TAMP side. And then there's a lot of them that you can buy independently on the OET side.
Okay.
You know, where you're doing more of the trading and choosing.
Yeah.
Why not? Crypto, we have quite a liberal crypto policy.
Okay.
Right now. Advisors can put up to 5% into crypto of a client's portfolio. Most companies were talking, we were just at a huge Orion event. The amount of people we talked to, they're like, oh, we're full stop. No, like you cannot.
It sounds like a compliance again.
Yeah. And to a degree, like I kind of get it. It's still, sure. It is still pretty.
So I said, it's a little scary. It's a wild west. It's
still probably pretty wild west.
But it's huge. You can't ignore it.
No, because clients are asking for it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really hard. If you've got clients really asking for something, the answer is just a flat no. So we're big on doing it really well and smart and so on and so forth. And our compliance team works really close with the advisors to make sure they're following those protocols.
Yep.
But you got to fulfill client demand.
Sure.
You know, and so.
Yeah, girl.
It goes back to being like technology driven. Like how are you tech first in 21st century and this and that? And then like you bring up crypto and you're just like, yeah, we don't allow that.
Crypto, social media.
Yeah. So that's why alts though, and why crypto.
Okay.
It's allowing advisors to do a better job in diversifying.
But with wisdom. It's not going like
with wisdom.
That's good.
Yeah.
The next question I have is about risk management and insurance. So TerraWealth has a national presence with a broad range of insurance solutions. What challenges were you trying to solve for advisors with this models and their clients, of course?
I mean, long-term care is one of the fastest growing next spaces.
Yep.
And I don't mean the long-term care insurance. I mean, nursing homes, You know, like care facilities. We've all seen them. They've been popping up all over the country. I don't care where you live.
Mm-hmm.
They're just absolutely everywhere. And what comes with that is this gigantic growing need for long-term care insurance,
okay,
which really has transitioned. Most of those policies have really changed over the last few years from more of a health-based product to more of a life-based chassis and how they're sold and what they're built into, like what products are built on. We think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Advisors need to have access to those products for their clients who need to be able to plan for that. They need to be able to plan for death. So I think life insurance is a key element.
So you wanted a broad range?
Broad range.
Because?
Yep. Where interest rates have gone, fixed index annuities have been fantastic for people for the last few years with interest rates where they were. A lot of people will be able to lock in with scared money, a lot of just really, really great positions.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, and it's right for the cloud, the solutions should be available versus not.
Yeah.
That's our big thing.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I'm not an advisor, but that gives me a lot of peace. Like the idea that I could really, I have so much to choose from. Like I can really understand this client and provide them what they need, not just the best of the limited selection that I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Broker-dealer. So TerraWealth operates, we've mentioned, as a full hybrid platform with broker-dealer capabilities. What advantage does this give advisors that they wouldn't get elsewhere?
I mean, it's partially, you know, a lot of people, legacy book. So if they were in the broker-dealer space, we needed to have it. Even though they might say I'm 80% fee-based now, they may have that 20% that's lingering.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right to get the client out of the product. They should stay in it. That's what's right for them, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You need a place to house those assets, first off. So we need it for that. I don't know how much new business. We don't do a whole lot of new broker-dealer business. And I don't think there's a lot of it really going on out there. There's a lot of other solutions that you don't have to go through that world anymore.
Okay.
But the other thing is that there's nearly, I haven't looked at the numbers in a while, there is nearly a broker dealer going out of business every day.
Oh, it sounds fun.
It's like 30 a month or something last time I saw it, right? So it's nearly that number, okay, or something very close. And that's because they're all started during the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
These guys who started these are timing out, aging out, or dying.
Mm-hmm.
And these assets are rolling up direct to these fund companies a lot of times, sitting in American funds or whatever. Clients are going direct to American funds, getting no support. So there's a tremendous opportunity out there for firms like us to buy broker dealers. And there's a tremendous opportunity for advisors to find broker dealers that are up for sale, where they can become a part of that. And, or like they can, or a fund like us can come alongside them and help them execute that kind of deal.
Okay.
And then take over those assets.
Sure.
Because a lot of these are selling for pennies on the dollar. I mean, they're just selling for one times earnings. In many cases, even lower, because the advisor is so old and in such a bad place. They just literally...
They didn't have a plan.
Yeah, I mean, that's how many are closing down.
Sure.
They didn't even... They're just like gone. A lot of them, they still have assets in them because the advisor's like, I'm good. It's 75. I'm like, it just drops dead of a heart attack. There's no succession plan. The company shuts down. The assets go away. The clients are left. They're left bastardized, for lack of a better term. We saw that as a big problem. It's one of the hardest things to solve for, that we're working through, because it is like, it's at scale so big. You're like, well, who do you go after? And like, who do you help? And how do you find them? And how do they find you? And we're working through that. But we see that as like a huge business opportunity.
Sure.
For Gen X and millennial advisors, the younger advisors.
It sounds like a need in the market.
Oh, it's a tremendous need.
Yeah.
There's this massive need. There's a lot of advisors who have tons of clients who need a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these clients shouldn't be in the positions they're in anymore. It'd make a lot more sense to be on a fee-based platform.
Yeah.
So we've got that ability where you could, you know, get that broker-dealer, move those assets from a BD to RIA. It's complicated, but it's part of our 2025-26 initiatives.
Yeah.
To really like hone in on that.
Cool.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not happening overnight. We've got some of them in the works right now, but... I think it's pretty key, because to me, it's just it's downright wrong that there's this many clients.
Absolutely.
You're just like rolling up to companies because their advisors didn't plan for their demise or retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we've covered the full hybrid platform. So I'm curious about the future. Like, looking ahead, what are you most excited about for TerraWealth?
I'm really excited about a few of the things we just like talked about, right?
Yeah.
A couple of our core things that have been some of our hardest things to solve for.
Mm-hmm.
But the royalties for advisors, I think there's a tremendous opportunity for a lot of companies.
When I heard that, like, I kind of want to be an advisor now. Yeah. So if you need somebody.
The connection of advisors. I think there's a lot of advisors at a lot of firms that if they left, they've got a tremendous amount of credibility with their friends, and their friends would be calling them.
Yeah, because they know their character. They know they wouldn't be at a platform that.
Yep.
I can't trust.
And to have a plan that helps them create some sort of balance and freedom in their life. Imagine their own business. They're bringing home $500,000 a year, and then they're picking up another $200,000 in royalties. You know, he's got a really big chunk of your income that you're no longer working for, only because you helped create our overall system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about the brands taking shape. It's been a couple of years, and it's really solidifying in a lot of really cool ways. And I'm excited for growth. I mean, we're probably going to triple our AUM this year is what it looks like, and kind of how things are going. So that's also really fun. So
good. Kind of in line with that, how do you see a financial advisor's needs changing in the next few years? Like, if a financial advisor is listening, maybe there's something on the horizon that they're not seeing. What should they be aware of?
They should be aware that their firms are not going to keep up in AI.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't even touched on that yet. We're talking AI.
And firms that are using AI.
Mm-hmm.
I said this, and then I heard another guy say recently, it was quite interesting, on a podcast much bigger than mine. And he said, I don't think AI is going to put financial advisors out of business, but it's going to put financial advisors who don't use AI out of business. And I had already said that. And then somebody with more credibility than me said that as well. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I think that it's going to be the case. And a lot of firms just aren't going to allow it.
Yeah.
And we're already like way on the forefront of that for not only our advisors, but how they do a tremendous amount of their work with it to condense and consolidate timeframes.
Yep.
So I think that's one thing that advisors are really going to have to look out on. If your companies are like against alts, if your company's against crypto, if your company's against AI,
social media,
if your company's against you advertising, you need to get out of there. Because
before it's too late,
because it's going to get you, they're going to push you to a dangerous place.
Sure.
Because what happens with technology, well, we've seen it a lot the last few years, is if you don't adapt, the world moves so much faster than it used to. It used to be like, if you didn't adapt in 10 years from now, you might be out of business. Now you don't adapt, in 18 months from now, you're out of business.
Sure.
It just happens so much darn faster. And those are a couple of the key things that are like, you need to be watching out for these things. Because if they're not allowing you to do that, if you're not allowed to advertise on the slurp, we have the opportunity to advertise for free on platforms that have hundreds of millions of people on them at no cost to you. It's just effort and energy, right? Social media.
Yeah.
And you're not allowed to do that? What are you talking about? Like, what do you mean I'm not allowed to do that? Now, you might do it and suck at it, and you will suck at it for a while, and you will get better, okay? Like, I know from personal experience, I feel like my podcast is getting better. Like, I understand sucking at it. I get it.
Yeah.
In trying to get better at it, you might not be very good at it, but at least you can do it. At least you have the opportunity to get better. If the answer is no, you're never even going to have the opportunity to get better. You're just going to get gone.
And I'll say in a landscape where very few advisors are allowed, even if you're not an expert yet, you're going to stand out.
Yep.
It's just like, at least this guy's talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have the legacy advisors who have a big book of business. They're going to be able to rest on that laurel, and they're going to be able to ride that out.
Which you could have done.
Maybe. I was maybe young enough or building enough or old enough. But I don't think you can grow. I really do think that technologically, we're going to be at a place here pretty soon.
You'll be snuffed out.
Yeah. We're going to see consolidation. We're already seeing it. We're still lots of BD's calls. We're seeing just a lot of this consolidation through private equity and all kinds of stuff like that. And I think what's going to continue to happen is you're going to have consolidation in the amount of reps. I think the average rep, due to technology and AI and so on and so forth, is going to, in the future, be able to manage 10 times the amount of clients that they manage right now.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know this for a fact. I'm just speculating. But I think it's going to...
Write this down. Check you.
Timestamp.
Yeah.
I think it's going to allow you to deal with a lot more clients efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So then what's going to happen is we're going to have a need for less advisors.
So basically only the best?
Only the best will exist. People are going to sit at home and they're going to say to their house, which they named Jessica or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Alexa, you know?
Yeah.
They're going to say, hey, Alexa, I need a financial planner. Alexa doesn't give you options. It gives you AMM.
Sure.
I found this lady in town. She has 354 5-star reviews.
Whoa.
Use AMZ or whatever.
Right? What'd she do? I want to sign up for it.
Right. But if you say, but you then Google it, like type is going away. Everything's going to voice. Like we're learning that every single app now allows you just to talk verbally to it. We're going to continue to move more towards voice and away from writing.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes with voice is we don't get the screen full of like a million options anymore. It gives us an answer.
Yeah.
Ask ChatGPT. It gives you the answer.
Who's the best financial advisor near me?
And based on the internet, your social priest It looks, it's good. AI is going to go in and it's going to look at this person's LinkedIn, their Google reviews. They're going to, it's going to take all those metrics really quick, add them together, and it's going to decide who you should go see. It's going to make the decision for you. I'm speculating on this, but I think it's.
I mean,
it's how a lot of it kind of works now. So
I hear you.
That forward, like the
it makes sense.
So the advisor who isn't doing that is going to grow because the market's growing.
Yeah.
AUM will grow.
Yeah.
They'll lose some clients to attrition and death.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They'll hold on to their old clients, and the young clients will switch to somebody who is more technologically advanced.
Sure.
And
someone who can text.
Yeah, their business will just kind of like slowly go downhill until they retire or die. And then what's going to happen at the bottom is we're going to have less and less advisors who are managing a dramatically larger amount of clients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Amazon Alexa example is really interesting because like 20, 30 years ago, you would go like to the local cafe or something and you know the regulars as part of your community and you would talk to the most trusted guy and say, hey, I need to change financial advisors. Like, here's what's going on. Or I have never invested before. Like, what do you think? That's over.
Over. I was at the cigar bar last night and I was hanging out with these, there was like 10 dudes, a dozen guys nearly around this table. I'm 40. I was the only guy in the room with dark hair.
Still can't believe you're only 40. It's not fair.
The average age in the room, we were going around, the one guy was 77, the average age is mid-60s, okay?
Yeah.
Now, I'm the young guy sitting in the group, okay, because I like cigars and bourbon, so you kind of, the crowd ages up a little bit. But I'm sitting there talking to these guys, and the fact of the matter is this. I'm having a conversation. Nobody's looking at their phone. Why is that occurring? What did I just say? I'm the only guy under the age of 58 there.
Mm-hmm.
Went from 50 to 40. Okay, the youngest guy was 58. Everybody else is 58 plus.
Mm-hmm.
This tells you something. The older generation isn't there. They're not having conversations like that with
things
anymore.
They're on their couch, on their phone.
They're on the couch, on the phone. They're on PlayStation. They're on the internet. You like it, dislike it, who cares? I'm not giving you
it. It is a little sad. It's just sad. It is what it is. Yeah.
The best advisors might go out of business. The ones who are most known
online
are the ones who will win. Being the best doesn't matter anymore. Being smart actually doesn't mean jack shit anymore. The internet, a calculator in your pocket made the ability for you to do math irrelevant.
If you could call 5 clients who like had a fantastic experience with you and you got 5 Google reviews and the like 6 financial advisors around you, 2 of them don't even have, they have no online presence. 2 more have like 1 or 2 reviews. One's good, one's bad. You got 5 5-star Google reviews. You're now the man.
That quick. Yeah. It's hilarious. And like people walked in the office and were like, why did you book the appointment? Like, where did you come from? Oh, I Googled you guys. They had the best reviews.
Checked your website out.
Yeah. And people were saying nice things for you guys. So I came here. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's just where the world's going. You can fight it. That's fine. You can fight it. You'll lose. Everybody who's ever fought it lost.
Yeah.
It's just a buy. You just buy in or you don't. You know what I mean? You got a landline in your house still? You got the long cord that goes around the corner? Nobody's doing it. It's like grandma held on for a long time, but guess what? Yeah. Grandma got rid of that landline.
Yeah, the rotary phone. Gone.
Technology slowly replaces things. It doesn't matter if you hold on or if you try to hang on to the past or not, you might as well let it go and adopt the future because there's no sign that I could ever see in the past where holding on works. It just ends up getting taken away from you anyways.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to happen to advisors if they're not careful.
So for advisors hearing this and being like, oh my gosh, this resonates, like, we got to talk. What do they do? How do they get a hold of you or learn more?
Ontario Wealth Talk, we've got a tab called, I believe, Careers tab, or Business Advisor, something like that. And there's drop down. They can book an appointment there. We also have in the show notes, wherever you, if you're listening to this audio right now or you're on YouTube, there's show notes below where we have a website you can click on that actually goes straight to, it's what we call our Merger and Acquisitions landing page, where we've got some videos from some of the founders, who we are, what we do, what you've heard more exhaustively now.
They can hear from everybody else.
Hear from our compliance officer, hear from Scott. Our CEO, Scott, who's my partner. Hear from Jared My Diamond, who's one of our other founders and my partner.
Compliance department.
Which David is the coolest compliance dude. For sure. So yeah, that's in the show notes below. They can click on that and find that, or just go to terrawealth.com.
Good. Well, if I could wrap up with one question, if you could give one piece of advice to advisors looking to grow and scale their practice, what would it be?
One thing.
I know, it's limiting.
To scale their practice, what would it be?
Yeah.
Well, reflect on what I said. Okay. If some of the key things I said you need to do in order to grow and scale, you can't do, click the show notes below, watch the video and reach out to us. Kind of a joke, but not really, because I think those things are actually that paramount.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you're going to win in the future without some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I think it was the last episode or two episodes ago I did on here. One of the best things I think you could do, if you do have a tremendous amount of limitation, and you're like, my brain isn't going to allow me to do this and do that, there's a lot of old school techniques that post-COVID, everybody threw out baby with the bathwater.
Okay.
It's like, everybody's like, well, I'm going to go digital.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, my brain won't really let me do digital fully. So now what you're doing is you're just not prospecting anymore. Go back to doing some of the cool old stuff.
Okay.
Good. Scroll up like an episode or two. There's a full episode I did on. Go back to trade shows. Go back to doing dinner seminars. Yeah, get your seminar dean back on. You see what I'm saying? Get back in coffee shops. Get back out on the golf course. Get back in your Rotary clubs. Whatever the hell you got to do. You get the old school. Start getting in front of people again.
Yeah.
Reach out to your marketing team. See if they'll let you start doing direct mail.
Or talk to your kid who actually understands how.
Yeah, right. So I think some of those old school methods still work really in a powerful way.
Okay.
And almost any firm will allow you to do the old school. They just want you to do the new school. I'm big on doing both.
Sure.
I'm really big
on mailers.
Mailers.
You're sexy.
Mailers can still work.
Yeah.
Direct mail still works. It's pretty expensive, but it still works.
Mm-hmm.
And, so anyways, you can do it.
It's good.
I think it's a lot easier if you have a CRM behind you that follows up and makes life a lot easier. But,
yeah,
you know, can't win them all. So like I said, you know, if they're not allowed you to do it, just call us at Terry Wolf.
You'll have them.
We'll talk to you about making a change. So, yeah.
Good.
And then I'll say for the first time, your podcast editor, Kelly, is always telling me, I have to actually ask you to like and subscribe. So like the video. Subscribe.
She walks by your office just randomly. Don't forget.
She's like, you never say it. I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I'm peddling. Spotify. Anyways, we really appreciate that. If you leave a review, Spotify or iTunes or YouTube, any of that stuff, it greatly helps the show, helps the algorithms, of course, when people do that sort of stuff. So
yeah.
It's funny because I'm talking about tech, but I don't want to do that, which is funny.
No, there's a resistance. Even to like the young, just barely 40 guys.
Yeah.
It's like, we get it. But. Yeah. That's where it's going. That's where it is.
Versus.
Yeah. Exactly. Good. Well, this was great.
It's fun.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
All right. Welcome to the disclosures for the Advisors Collective. The conversations on this podcast are intended to provide financial advisors with ideas, strategies, concepts, and tools that could be incorporated into their advisory practice. Advisors are ultimately responsible for ensuring implementation and compliance of anything discussed in according with your regulatory and compliance responsibilities and obligations. These discussions are meant purely for educational purposes. None of the information heard should be taken as financial advice or planning. The conversations and opinions that are expressed in the show are that of each host only and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of the other hosts and their affiliated companies. This podcast is not intended to give tax, legal, or investment advice. Always consult with a qualified professional. For my practice, securities are offered through Cape Securities Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory accounts are offered through Terra Wealth Management.